Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday, thousands of teachers marched on the Arizona State Capitol demanding a 20% raise and increases to public education funding. If Arizona lawmakers fail to meet their demands by the end of this legislative session, Arizona teachers say they will go on strike. Many teachers in Arizona and other states work two or three jobs to make ends meet. We've been covering this for the past couple of months. Oklahoma teachers say they will walk out on Monday. In more than 90 districts in the state, schools are now closed on Mondays because of budget cuts. Oklahoma legislators just approved a $6,100 pay raise for teachers, but the teachers' union say it does not go far enough. They want fully funded schools. Earlier this month, Kentucky teachers rallied against a state bill that would cut their pensions. These actions follow last month's historic 9-day strike in West Virginia. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice recently signed a bill giving teachers and school workers a 5% raise. This movement is exploding. Where is it headed? Today we are joined by Sharon Reese. She teaches special education in Shawnee, Oklahoma. She's been teaching for 26 years. Hi, Sharon. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Appreciate you having me on.
Great to have you on. We're also joined by Heather DeLuca Nestor, a middle school teacher and the leader of the West Virginia Education Association chapter in Morgantown, West Virginia. Heather has been teaching for 16 years. Hi, Heather. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you again for having me.
Thank you again for joining us. Lindsay Schlacks joins us in studio. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
She is a teacher at Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco. Lindsay has taught so many subjects, social studies, LGBTQ and ethnic studies, AP government, and economics. She co-founded Teachers Take Action Against Gun Violence and SFUSD Educators Connect. This is the kind of person that we want in our schools, but unfortunately, like so many teachers, Lindsay is leaving teaching for an administrative job because she can no longer support her family. Thank you for coming in, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
Sharon, I want to start off with you because I understand that we have some breaking news. Oklahoma legislators just approved a $6,100 pay raise for teachers, but the teachers' union says it doesn't go far enough?
Well, let me clarify something. The average increase would be $6,100, but for our newer teachers, they would get a $5,000 raise, and teachers like me that are more experienced would get more than that. So it's actually an average raise. What the Oklahoma Education Association was asking for was a 3-year plan with a total of a $10,000 raise, and what people need to keep in mind is Oklahoma has teachers have not gotten a raise from our state legislature in 10 years. That would just kind of bring us up to perhaps where we should have been in the first place.
Mm. Sharon, what does a starting teacher in Oklahoma make?
Average starting salary for a teacher in Oklahoma is going to be right around $32,000.
$32,000. For people in the Bay Area, the cost of living, as you know, is extremely high. Can you make ends meet on $32,000 a year in Oklahoma?
There is no way that you could do that. I dare say there's not a teacher that I know that does not have a second or third job.
Wow.
Try to just get ends to meet, let alone being able to save anything, let alone if we're putting kids through college. We don't even come close to really making that living wage. We have a lot of teachers in Oklahoma that are actually qualify for free and reduced. Their kids qualify for free and reduced lunches. We actually have a lot of teachers in Oklahoma living at the poverty level.
The majority of the teachers you know work two or three jobs to make ends meet.
Absolutely. I do.
What else do you do?
I'm a choir director at our local church. I conduct our handbell choir.
Wow. And this is so closely related to teachers leaving. According to the Learning Policy Institute, 8% of teachers are leaving every year because of low pay. Sharon, do you know teachers who have just gotten so fed up that they've decided to leave?
Oh, I know quite a few teachers that have gotten up and gotten fed up and decided to leave. I also know teachers that are planning retirement and then to go on with a second career in another state of teaching.
Wow. We heard the same thing, Heather, when we had you on our show and others from West Virginia, that teachers were so fed up they cannot make ends meet, and they were leaving West Virginia to go teach in other states.
Yeah, we had over 700 teacher vacancies that do not have highly qualified teachers. And then this year, and, you know, that was one of the driving forces for us to do the work stoppage. You know, through this, you know, we did get what they call a 5% in 1 year, which is about, it's actually just $20,020 for teachers, and we were 48th paid in the nation. And so, you know, I've had student teachers every year, and for probably, I would say, the last 7 years, and out of those student teachers, I've had one stay in West Virginia, and she was a non-traditional student. Her kids were already in school, and she, this was her second job coming into teaching, actually. So, you know, I mean, it's an epidemic, and, you know, I didn't realize how widespread it was or nationwide that it is occurring until, you know, the work stoppage and then all of the information, you know, that we were getting. And to look at it from the national perspective, you know, legislators and government, they need to step up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, we did a show a couple of weeks ago about how school funding in so many states across the country is either flat or less than it was after the crash. So we haven't had many increases when it comes to fully funded schools. Lindsay, you teach in San Francisco.
Yes.
Where it is incredibly difficult to find housing and to make ends meet. What's the situation like for teachers in one of the wealthiest cities in the country?
We're very much, teachers in San Francisco struggle to make ends meet all the time. Our salaries compared to teachers across the nation are higher, but we are not able, in most cases, teachers don't make enough to be able to qualify for, like, the 3 times rent that many apartments require. If a teacher's salary is the only income that's happening in that family, then you can't qualify to rent a home in San Francisco. So many of the teachers that I know don't get to live in the community that they teach in because we can't afford it. So I live in Alameda. And I've never been able to, in my career, I've never been able to actually live in the community that I teach in, because we just can't afford it. And there are more and more teachers are leaving San Francisco and are getting pushed out of SFUSD because of the commute or because we can't afford to be there. Our union and our district is looking at the possibility of creating teacher housing for us, which has benefits and drawbacks, but I think that a lot of teachers would be much more in favor of being paid enough to live in the communities that we work in.
And unfortunately, you are the kind of teacher that we all would want to have in our schools. You've taught social studies. You've taught LGBTQ and ethnic studies. You are the co-founder of Teachers Against Take Action Against Gun Violence, SFUSD Educators Connect. I mean, even though you live in Alameda, you're doing so many things in this community. Uh-huh. And because you can't support your family, you're going to leave teaching to take an admin job?
I am. I'm currently finishing up a master's degree in educational leadership at UC Berkeley through the Principal Leadership Institute, and I'm looking for an administrative level job next year. It's kind of a two-part thing. I'm sad about leaving teaching, very much so, and I would have waited a bit longer to move into leadership if I had been paid enough to be able to support my entire family. But I'm also very interested in being able to advocate for teachers and for students in a much broader way. The work that we do in the classroom is incredibly consuming, and it's very difficult to find enough time to be able to do the kind of advocacy and organizing that's required in order to bring teacher voices to the legislature or to other places that would enable us to be paid, like what the teachers in West Virginia and Oklahoma and across the country are in need of.
What has it been like for all of you? Because of social media, teachers are able to share their stories. I've seen photos of tattered American history books that have not been updated in decades. I mean, they're sharing what they're going through. And there's been so many amazing connections over the past couple of months. Lindsay, what is it like for you to hear from Sharon in Oklahoma and Heather in West Virginia?
I think it's wonderful that we can connect like this. 15 years ago, we wouldn't be able to have this kind of organizing. And I think digital organizing in particular and being able to use social media to connect is empowering teachers and our students in ways that we haven't been able to see before. When we can communicate and when we can share stories and talk about, like, my district offers this and my district isn't offering that, we can band together and be much more of a group in solidarity with each other across the country.
What would you add to that, Heather, when teachers in West Virginia went on the historic strike last month? I heard from so many teachers in West Virginia that they were just overwhelmed by the support they got from teachers across the country.
You would not have believed our... We had a United page, and it blew up with teachers across the country, groups just sending pictures saying they support us. When we were in the Capitol, in San Francisco, I think it was out of California, the organization sent hundreds of pizzas.
Yeah, that was my union, actually, the United Educators of San Francisco. We sent pizzas.
Yeah, I mean, that was... Oh, I mean, overwhelming, and just the feeling of being supported. You know, a couple weekends ago, I got to go to Chicago to the national NEA, the national conference, and you know, I was standing at a table with a lady, and we started talking, and she asked where I was from, and I said West Virginia, and she got all emotional, and she said, you know, I can't believe what you all did, and you know, we really didn't understand the ramifications of what was happening, when it was happening, because it was all happening so quickly. And so just to see the movement and, you know, the whole reason I do what I do anyways is to make a difference in my kids' lives and to make a difference in teachers' lives and to make their lives better. And just to know that we're making a difference and people are listening at this point, even if we have to force them, that, you know, conditions are going to become better for education. And that's, you know, my main goal.
And Heather, it's not just teachers. I understand that you have seen workers in the telecom industry in your state go on strike. You've seen movements start in Arizona and Oklahoma. And in Arizona, you know, teachers had signs that said, "Don't make us go West Virginia on you." The Fight for 15 Twitter feed is full of information about the success in West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been part of something that came together so quickly and stood united so powerfully. You know, our local CWA workers from Frontier, their strike did just end. They were successful, and through social media, we've been able to keep a close eye on other organizations and states. And so West Virginia is unique because I believe we're one of the only states that have counties. The rest of the country has pretty much districts. And so, you know, we were able to stay 55 united because of the counties. And so, you know, different counties offer a little bit a different package, like if they have a levy or opposed to a county that doesn't have a levy. But as far as like the health insurance, PEIA, which is our company, it's statewide and it's mandated and it's for all public employees. So, you know, we were able to see what impact we were having. And like I said, we never in a million years thought it would be like this. But obviously, conditions across the nation are going backwards. You know, I know in West Virginia, you know, in the 90s, public education was funded at 57%. We now drop to 43.7%. We lose money. And, you know, and media tries to say, oh, our schools are failing, and then we're going to introduce these voucher schools and charter schools, you know. And your schools really aren't failing, but that's a way to take money from the public education schools. And, you know, and then parents actually think, oh, these schools are failing, I don't want my child to go there, which is not the case. But it sets us up to fail because it's now taking our funds.
You know, this is such a good point. And remember, it was, I think, 2 years ago when a lot of the... There was so much criticism of teachers. Remember that in the media?
Yeah.
A few years ago?
Well, I mean, it really reached a height. It was just really so the media was just on this. Sharon, what about Heather's point about that frame that schools are failing, but we don't go much deeper to talk about how so many schools are not fully funded you can barely make ends meet. You have to have another job. You have to buy your own school supplies. What are your thoughts about that frame, schools are failing?
Well, let's talk about funding for a second. In Oklahoma, we have had cuts to public education, $170 million-plus in the past 10 years. We are educating 40,000 students, 40,000 more students with 170 million fewer dollars. Now, explain to me how people can come up and say that we are failing when we are doing the best we can to make it work with what we have. I've never understood that argument, and honestly, I don't see that attitude from people in Oklahoma right now. We are getting tremendous community support because not only are we fighting for the teacher pay raise that was passed in the House and the Senate, but we are still fighting to increase our support employees' funding. We are still fighting to increase money to the General Education Fund. What the Senate and the legislature and the House have approved so far in Oklahoma would pay for about one more textbook per child. Mm. I teach high school. We have seven periods in the day. What textbook do we want our principals to buy? Do we want them now to have a math book? Do we want them now to have social studies books? So I don't see how people can say we're failing when we are doing the best we can, and we have awesome student body, and they are going off to do wonderful things.
Sharon Reese teaches special education in Shawnee, Oklahoma. She has been teaching for 26 years. Oklahoma legislators just approved a raise for teachers, depending on where teachers are, if they're new, if they've been there for a long time, average of about $5,000. The teachers' union say that it does not go far enough. They want fully funded schools. They might walk out on Monday. Heather DeLuca-Nestor is a middle school teacher and the leader of the West Virginia Education Association chapter in Morgantown, West Virginia. Heather has been teaching for 16 years. And Lindsay Schlacks is a teacher at Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco. She co-founded Teachers Take Action Against Gun Violence and SFUSD Educators Connect. Like so many teachers, Lindsay is leaving teaching for an administrative job because she can no longer support her family. And if you'd like to join us, if you are an educator, a teacher, if you care about public education, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. What stories would you like to share about what it's like in your area? Do you make enough to make ends meet? Is your school fully funded? Do you have what you need? And then what do you think about the strikes that we're seeing across the country? Teachers from different states connecting and this rise in teacher power. You can also watch the show on Facebook, facebook.com/KALW Public Radio. Click on the video and take part in the conversation there. You can email yourcall@KALW.org. Sharon, give us a sense of how things work in Oklahoma. Have you seen a lot of tax cuts over the years? Because that's what we're seeing in many, many states. And Oklahoma is one of the most oil-rich states in the country. So why is this happening in Oklahoma?
We have absolutely seen tax cuts, and frankly, that's what got us into the situation we're in now. Mm-hmm. We also have very, very strong lobbying among oil and gas, and Oklahoma also has a huge wind energy segment, and they, to put it bluntly, aren't really paying their fair share. And they do in certain school districts, but they don't statewide. And so that's why one of the things that the Oklahoma Education Association, which I'm on the board, one of the things that we were fighting for was to increase the gross production tax to 5%, which still puts us at one of the lowest in the nation, because we know that oil and gas is going to continue to drill where there is oil and gas, and we have it here. So, but they have threatened to pull out of the state if we increase our gross production tax. There's actually going to be a state question in November that the Oklahoma voters will be voting on to even raise that now to 7%. So that's what we're hoping that the state voters will approve of, but tax cuts is absolutely what got us into the place we are in now. Mm.
I think it's really worth pointing out with regard to the funding that our schools receive. The United States is attempting something that hardly any other country does. We believe that we can educate everybody. That's not something that other countries do, and particularly other countries that have these enormously high test scores in math or science or anything else. They will often put barriers in the place of students being able to go on to secondary levels of education. And in the United States, we don't do that. We believe that every student has the right to education. And that does cost more money. The thing that we do here, though, that's particularly sad, especially I think looking in the Bay Area especially, but across the country, is that we connect funding for schools to where students are mm-hmm. and how wealthy their communities are. And we make it less likely that students who are growing up in a socioeconomically disadvantaged community will be able to access the same kinds of resources that students who are already privileged with higher socioeconomic status have. So it sounds like that's exactly what's happening in Oklahoma, where in some places tax money is going to provide better schools or more funding, and in other places they're missing out, and we're just deciding that based on where children live, mm-hmm. Which is a really sad thing to see.
And then we've done shows about the PTA, and if you happen to live in a district where mm-hmm. your family has resources and they're able to have fundraisers, then you do have a fully funded school.
Yeah, absolutely. Even in Alameda, where we live, it's a town of about, a city of about 75,000 people, I think, and there is a vast difference in the amount of funding that PTAs provide to elementary schools from one end of the island to another.
Let's take a few calls before we go to break. Let's hear from Kelly in Alameda. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. I was just wondering, as a mother of two young boys in Alameda, California, what can I do as a community member to help support our local teachers?
Thank you.
Hi, Kelly. In Alameda, there is a big fight for a parcel tax that's coming up. We have to renew this fairly regularly in order to provide extra funding to the schools. And there are several businesses and community members who think that it shouldn't be their responsibility to pay a little bit extra money in order to support our students. And so any action that local community members can take to promote the parcel taxes and to say that education is the responsibility of everybody in the community is a huge step forward.
And this parcel tax will be on the November ballot?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Okay.
We had a parcel tax renewal in 2016, but it needs to be renewed. It's not a permanent parcel tax. So every time it expires, it has to be renewed.
Okay. Well, we'll look that up and give listeners that information. Thank you for calling, Kelly. Heather, how do you think the public can support public school teachers?
We had huge outpouring in West Virginia, and it really started with when somebody, I'm not sure which one of you said, you know, that we can educate people and we have that privilege to do that. It started with educating our public, and we had informational rallies at WVU basketball games, and every county pretty much in West Virginia started getting out at grocery stores, at public events, and just handing out information to let the public know what we're fighting for and why we're doing what we're doing. And that started a movement. And then parents realized that, you know, funding is being lost for their kids, and teachers aren't qualified in the classrooms. And they work closely with teachers. And there are, you know, parents are our friends. And so, it was really a joint effort, because we have lots of free and reduced lunch in West Virginia, and when we knew that we were going to be out of school that Thursday and Friday, the work stoppage initially started, food poured into the schools, and teachers and students and, parents came and they bagged the food because we were sitting at home with them on Wednesday evening when they were leaving school. And that happened all over our state. And so public support, it was there. And especially other unions reached out to us, because teachers unions are a little different because we don't have collective bargaining. Mm. The other unions have collective bargaining. And so, you know, when we talk about teachers unions versus other unions in West Virginia, you're kind of comparing apples and oranges, because our unions are there for support. They're there for resources. And obviously, you know, with the work stoppage, their leadership and their organization were key in moving West Virginia to be 55 United. Without them, you know, we would not have been strategically placed the way we were and been able to accomplish what we did without them. And so, but public support you know, I think once people are educated and they really know what the issues are, because, you know, we're parents and we have a life and we have jobs, and, you know, lots of teachers have two jobs, like they've said, you know, and I know that I coach, and so, you know, we're busy, and so we don't, life gets in the way, and we don't often pay attention to the important details that need to be paid attention to.
Heather DeLuca-Nestor is a middle school teacher in West Virginia. She's been teaching for 16 years. Sharon Reese is a teacher in Shawnee, Oklahoma. She's been teaching for 26 years and has a second job to make ends meet. Lindsay Schlax is a teacher in San Francisco. She's been teaching for 10 years and is leaving teaching for an administrative job because she can no longer support her family. On today's Your Call, we are talking about rising teacher power, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the student-led March for Our Lives rallies around the country. How is this youth movement changing media coverage of gun control and the NRA? We will also discuss a year-long investigation examining lead poisoning in the San Francisco Bay Area from KALW News. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Today we're talking about teacher power. We're joined by Sharon Reese. She teaches special education in Shawnee, Oklahoma. She's been teaching for 26 years and has a second job to make ends meet. Heather DeLuca-Nestor is a middle school teacher and leader of the West Virginia Education Association chapter in Morgantown, West Virginia. Heather has been teaching for 16 years. Lindsay Schlax is a teacher at Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco. She's been teaching for 10 years. Unfortunately, she's leaving teaching for an administrative job because she can no longer support her family. And before we get back to calls, Sharon, I wanted to ask you the same question. What can people do to support public teachers at this critical time? You and your colleagues in Oklahoma are thinking about walking out on Monday.
Well, I would tell you we are walking out on Monday.
You are definitely walking out on Monday.
Yep.
Oh, and I wanted to ask you, since you're walking out on Monday, we did a show about the fact that so many schools in Oklahoma are now closed on Mondays. Is your school closed on Mondays?
Yes. Our school, well, I don't think I can say publicly yet that our school has not announced, but I believe they will be closing on Monday to let us go to the Capitol to advocate for education funding. The last I heard, there were 178 districts. As Heather pointed out, Oklahoma is not on a county system like West Virginia is. And I'm just going to add, we haven't said this yet, but as a twist of fate, I am from Morgantown, West Virginia. Oh. Heather and I connected last night. She actually teaches about a mile away from my parents' house.
Hmm.
So I was following very closely what was going on in West Virginia, listening to their local radio stations and following along in the local newspapers. So what I am going to say that people can do to help that they don't even realize the power they have as an individual is call your local legislator. I know in West Virginia the legislative session is now over. However, in Oklahoma we still have our legislative session going on until the end of May. Our local legislators need to hear from us, and they need to hear from our parents so that they know that they have the public support to make the really difficult choices. We've been talking about what the Oklahoma Senate and House passed. The Senate passed it last night. This was a historic event for Oklahoma. It was the first time since 1992 when Oklahoma voters voted to require a 75% supermajority to raise taxes in the state of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time that the legislature has done that since that time. This was huge. And there was a very strong lobbying effort with oil and gas especially that they did not want taxes raised. So we have to take a moment and pause because this was a huge victory for Oklahoma, but we still know that we need to do more, and our local legislators need those phone calls from their constituents to know that they are supported when they vote for these really tough measures. So I would say one of the most important things, contact your local representative.
Make sure that people get out and vote, and they don't vote socially. They vote on the issues that are really going to impact their state, and that's really important. You know, we need people to vote, and you know, our movement's just started here, and so our next move, we have political action committees that are through WVEA that are looking at candidates. They look at their voting records. They have to fill out questionnaires. There's a big selection process, and then those candidates will be endorsed by the local unions. that do support education. And so, you know, we also, like I said, need to educate our public on those issues. So when it comes time in the May and November vote, they know what candidates are going to, you know, at least what candidates say they're going to hold true to their word and support education.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon, you talked about the tax increase. It's the first time since 1990 that any chamber of the legislature in Oklahoma voted to increase taxes. How did you all do it?
Mobilizing our people, having people contact our legislators, telling them, and also, frankly, we took a lot of our inspiration from West Virginia. I know I said I have a personal vested interest in West Virginia, but we saw the great success they had. I moved from West Virginia to Oklahoma, and I joke all the time, the only difference is Oklahoma is flat. And we saw that when West Virginia could mobilize their people and make a real change for public education, that's when people in Oklahoma started going, well, we can do the same thing. And that is really what's given us the energy and the excitement to plan this walkout starting on Monday. Mm. And really, it's a school closure. We're working on getting our districts to close school so that we are not, people get this wrong impression that we are walking out on our kids. And we look at it, we're walking out for our kids, and we're standing up to get them finally the education funding that they need so they don't have to have a tattered textbook. There's not just one class set of books, but they have a book that they can take home and they don't have to share anymore and get what our kids need in public education.
What else do you think people need to know about what teachers are currently facing? We've been talking a lot about very low teacher pay, and so many teachers have to work two or three jobs to make ends meet. In Arizona, 42% of teachers left the profession within a three-year period. I mean, almost half of teachers are leaving the profession. Arizona teachers have some of the lowest pay in the nation, averaging around $42,000 a year. Sharon, you work two jobs. Lindsay, you're leaving teaching for an admin job because you can't support your family. According to Arizona Central, teachers spend about $1,000 a year out of pocket on supplies for their classrooms. Lindsay, what about San Francisco teachers?
Oh, we absolutely spend that kind of money on our classrooms out of pocket. And it is, I mean, the salary piece is huge. Teachers work incredibly hard at their jobs. We are experts in quite a lot of things that people who sit in a classroom and our students may not be able to see because it happens behind the scenes. But in addition to demanding that we be paid the kind of salary that matches the expertise that we have, there's a whole host of other things that we're facing. We have facilities issues. We have textbook issues. We have to purchase supplies for our students. I provide my students with food quite a lot of the time, as does my school.
You provide your students with food because they're hungry?
Sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have the wellness center at my school. It's a wonderful place, and they provide kids with oatmeal and granola bars because, you know, when kids are hungry, it's hard for them to learn. When kids feel unsafe, it's hard for them to learn. And everything that affects students with regard to safety or with regard to trauma or with regard to issues of systemic or implicit racism, all of those things impact teachers as well. And part of what's so powerful about this organizing movement that's happening across the country is that we have the ability to say, not only is our salary or is the pay that teachers are receiving insufficient, but the support and the structures that are in place need to be improved as well, mm-hmm. because we're capable of doing better as a country.
You're providing food for students who are hungry. You also have to spend extra time working with homeless students, right? The last numbers, I'm looking at a couple articles, KTVU had a piece, 2018, 3,000 children are homeless in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. I mean, students who face a whole host of disadvantages need extra support in order to be successful in school. If they're sharing a room with a sibling or another family member, and that sibling or family member stays up late playing video games or talking on the phone, then the students aren't able to get sleep. They aren't able to concentrate on homework. They'll arrive to school in the morning feeling tired or feeling unprepared. Teachers in San Francisco get paid for a 7-hour day. I can't remember the last time I worked only 7 hours. I generally work around 10 to 12 hours a day as a teacher. And then I'm doing grad school on top of that. And I actually had to give up my side gig in order to make room in my life for graduate school. I was writing copy for Amazon listings in my spare time prior to that in order to make ends meet. And so teachers need to be given the opportunity to address all of these things. And when we advocate for ourselves, we are also advocating for our students. Mm-hmm.
Lindsay Schlax is a teacher in San Francisco. She's leaving teaching for an administrative job because she cannot support her family on her current salary. Heather, what else do you think people need to know about what teachers are facing?
I feel like, you know, we are advocates for our kids, most importantly. And, you know, just, you know, I can attest to everything she just said. You know, we have a food pantry that hands out food every day to students. You know, the mental health, we have an opioid crisis in West Virginia.
Right.
You know, we know that business has left with the, you know, when the bottom fell out of the mines, and people are desperate. And, you know, we need education and treatments and resources more than ever. So to be pulling money from where we can educate is just doing a huge disservice to not only the people of West Virginia, but obviously across the nation. And so, you know, and one of the frustrating things when it was Sharon that was talking about, you know, the oil industry, you know, there was a press release in 2015, and this is public knowledge, that one of my members, I asked her to, you know, come speak with me, and she came in with this press release about, you know, the pipelines and the oil in West Virginia. And through this process, what I've learned is it's about legislative priorities. And, you know, we have legislators that receive money from the oil companies, and so they don't want to make them pay more on the severance tax. It's in this press release, it said that we have 16 pipelines that are permitting in West Virginia, and for one pipeline, it would bring in $2.9 billion a year.
Wow.
For one, and we had 16. And so, you know, it could bring in $18 billion a year in gas. And, you know, there was a bill that was introduced, it's Senate Bill 486, and in a day it was tabled. And it took out some of the bad parts of gas, such as co-tenancy. It took those bad parts out but left the good parts. And all it was a 2% increase in the gas severance tax. And, like I said, it was tabled. And so that's probably what's most frustrating is West Virginia has the money. They just aren't keeping it. You know, for 150 years, we've lost resources with coal, with timber. Now we're natural gas, and we're also exporting our teachers, you know. And so that's important that people need to understand that there is money. It's just about the priorities legislatively, right, and where people want to give the money.
Right. And it also really is a matter of whether or not people are willing to invest in our communities. Investment in education pays off. It takes a little bit longer than spending some money on a pipeline might. But if we provide students with a proper education, if we put the money into things like universal preschool and early childhood education and fully funding education K through 12, that will pay off for everybody. We all benefit from a more educated society.
Sharon, what would you like to add?
There's a thing called the school-to-prison pipeline that gets a lot of attention at the national level.
Yep.
And if you look at the statistics at what, I'll just say, the state of Oklahoma uses and spends their money on to incarcerate a prisoner versus the money that they spend on education, mm-hmm. it is staggering. Mm-hmm. They could take that money, spend it in education, and give our kids a chance, a fighting chance at having a viable career, and that they could repay back society and with their taxes and keep our prison costs down. It's just staggering the money that they spend on that.
Yep, even here in California, which is a state run by Democrats, the latest numbers, it's about, the state of California spends about $12,000 per pupil, mm-hmm. K through 12, and $70,000 mm-hmm. per prisoner.
Yeah. And with regard to this movement that's been happening lately, the March for Our Lives and the student organizing that's happening, there are a lot of teachers who are taking part in this as well, which is what the group Teachers Take Action Against Gun Violence is about. We're a coalition of about 8,000 educators nationwide on Facebook who are organizing around ending gun violence. And a lot of legislators and more conservative folks have been advocating for an increase in the number of police officers and metal detectors and things like that at schools in order to keep us safe. But we really believe, and I think most educators who are paying attention to this issue really believe, that cracking down on discipline and adding more police officers into schools isn't the answer to issues of gun violence, that we really need to look at these root causes. The same as with funding in Oklahoma and in West Virginia. If we're addressing root causes, if we're addressing trauma and poverty and all of those kinds of things, we can keep kids safer and we can reduce the school-to-prison pipeline at the same time and probably save everybody money.
That's what was so amazing about the March for Our Lives rallies, to hear kids from South Los Angeles, Chicago, Washington, D.C. saying we need after-school programs, paid mentorships, paid internships, jobs. We talked to young women from Bayview Hunters Point a couple days ago. Yesterday, we spoke with young people, a few young men in Chicago who said we need opportunities in these neighborhoods.
Yes, absolutely. And there are phenomenal programs all over the country that provide opportunities for students, but just like schools, they're underfunded. One of my students, Simone, spoke at the March for Our Lives rally in San Francisco on Saturday, and she was a student who was able to take advantage of a program at the Third Street Youth Clinic here, and they provide just this wealth of education and opportunity and support for students, and funding programs like Third Street, in addition to funding our schools, can make a world of difference for students who may come from a disadvantaged background.
Yes, we have them on Tuesday's show. Lindsay Schlacks. Oh, Heather or Sharon, was that? Did you want to jump in?
No, that was me. I was just going to say, you know, even after, you know, we've taken this stance, just the other day, what was March 28th, the governor voted against a bill that dismantles our Department of Education of Arts, which deals with Energy Express, which feeds our children in the summer, and some rehabilitation services, moving to Commerce, and so you know, the problem with that is, as we're talking about increasing resources, you know, West Virginia once again has decided that, you know, we don't need those resources. It's not that we don't need those resources, but now it's given an opportunity for those programs to be lost because there's no specific designation to who's going to now take over those programs.
Heather DeLuca-Nestor is a middle school teacher in West Virginia, teaching for 16 years. Sharon Reese is a teacher in Shawnee, Oakland. She's been teaching for 26 years and has a second job to make ends meet. Lindsay Schlacks is a teacher in San Francisco, leaving teaching for an administrative job because she can no longer support her family. Let's hear from Maru in Oakland. Hi, Maru. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to give a shout out to Lindsay. I'm also a former and alumni of the Principal Leadership Institute, and I'm currently an administrator in Vallejo, and also want to give a shout out to the teachers who are fighting really hard right now, not only for themselves, but for our students and families. So I wanted to push back a little bit, Rose, on something you said earlier, that it is sad and unfortunate that Lindsay has to leave teaching. I want to just highlight that administrators themselves are teachers. Ultimately, what it means to be a principal is principal teacher. And so without strong administrators, without teacher leaders moving into administration and supporting schools, we wouldn't have strong schools, period. I think that administrators themselves, particularly those that are former teacher leaders, can really be an allied voice for teacher support and for funding and for powerful schools.
Yeah, and that wasn't a slight on administrators. It was just Lindsay said she'd rather be teaching for a little longer before going into administrative work. But she can't because she doesn't make enough to
And I am so lucky and privileged to be able to take advantage of the Principal Leadership Institute. PLI is a program that is preparing me to be able to really carry what I love about teaching and what I've learned from my time in the classroom forward. And I plan to use all of that knowledge to advocate for exactly what you're talking about and to empower teachers and students where I go from here. It's of all the ways to have to leave teaching, this is the best possible path for me to take. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about what's coming next.
Well, thank you for calling in, Maru. Maybe we should do another show about administrative positions because we don't really talk about that very much. But as she said, it's a very important piece in all of this. Let's go to our next caller. Do we still have Lisa in San Francisco? Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes, I'm so glad that you I was able to get in a little bit at the last minute, but I just want to say that I have two comments. Basically, I agree with all what your guests have said regarding the priorities, and even though there are countries in this world who are much poorer, like Cuba, for example, they don't need to have a sifting system where they don't have to provide education to everybody, but rather everybody does get an education, even though they have been dealing with a major economic blockade, which has severely impacted their finances and their economic situation. The other thing that I wanted to say is that the fact that so many of our so much of our communities are dependent on fossil fuel, supposedly fossil fuel income. When in reality, what that means is that money is being actually funneled away because we're the ones that are funding the fossil fuel. They're getting $680 million in tax refunds. So the way the system is set up is in reality is if we keep thinking that fossil fuel is going to save us to be able to pay for education, everything like that, we're really digging ourselves in a hole because they're actually taking and siphoning money away from us.
Thank you for calling in, Lisa. And to that point, Sharon, we did a show a couple of weeks ago and included information about Oklahoma's budget. And because there's the budget has been cut so much, many schools in Oklahoma are closed on Mondays.
Yeah.
Right? Can you give us an update? I mean, what are teachers saying about that? Parents, students?
Well, the message right now that we're hearing is as I said earlier, we are appreciative for what the legislators did for the teachers, but we are also fighting for state employee raise because they offer a lot of the wraparound services for our kids. We were talking earlier about all the services that kids need these days. We're talking about the kids that are homeless. We're talking about kids that are food insecure. We've been talking about some medical mental health issues for our kids. So we also are fighting for our state employees to get the raises that they have been denied over the past few years. We are also fighting to get funding in our schools. And the teachers, even though we appreciate it, we are still fighting for those other issues, and we will be at the Capitol on Monday to talk to our legislators.
And Heather, what would you say to Sharon as they're preparing to walk out?
Like Sharon said, we did speak some last night. I just be vigilant. One thing that I had to learn through this whole experience is even though, our superintendent supported us and counties weren't divided, which was a blessing, but just know that, you know what you're doing is right, and it is our job to advocate and stand up for our students and our states. And to do what you're going to do, because that's what makes the difference. And try not to take things personally, because you're always going to have somebody that's not going to agree with you. But at the same time, what you're doing, I didn't realize how important what I was doing was at the time, like I said, just because things moved so quickly. But stay the course and try to stay positive. Just, I kept telling my people, I'm here to inform you. I'm here to educate you, and at moments there were times I had to put out some fires because they didn't feel like the unions had their best interests at heart. But unions see a much larger perspective, and sometimes we get tunnel vision. And so I tried to assure them that they were taking everybody's perspective into consideration and doing what was best for everyone at the time. And so, you know, it is hard, but I have no doubt that their movement is just as strong as West Virginia's, and the same with Kentucky and Arizona. I think that's starting. And so stay the course, be strong, be vigilant, and be persistent.
Lindsay, what would you add just briefly?
Oh, just briefly. I mean, that's teacher leadership right there, what you're talking about, what Heather and Sharon are involved in, and what all of the teachers who are fighting right now for an end to gun violence or higher wages or fully funding, that is teacher leadership. And the more that we have teachers in positions where they can speak truth to power, where they can fight for funding, for advocacy, where they can lift up student voices, the better off we're all going to be.
Sharon, there's going to be a walkout in Oklahoma on Monday, and then you will all decide whether or not to turn it into a longer strike. Is that right?
Well, the plan is now to walk out until they fully fund education.
All right. Well, we will be watching, and we would love to check in with you again. Sharon Reese teaches special education in Shawnee, Oklahoma. She's been teaching for 26 years and has a second job to make ends meet. Teachers in Oklahoma will be walking out on Mondays. Monday. Heather DeLuca-Nestor is a middle school teacher and leader of the West Virginia Education Association chapter in Morgantown, West Virginia. She's been teaching for 16 years. Lindsay Schlacks has been teaching for 10 years. She's a teacher at Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco. She is leaving teaching for administration because she can no longer support her family on her teacher salary. Lindsay, Heather, and Sharon, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And follow Teachers Take Action on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're organizing teachers across the country to end gun violence, and we'd love to have you with us.
Great. Thank you so much. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the student-led March for Our Lives rallies around the globe. How is this incredible youth movement changing media coverage of gun control and the NRA? We'll also discuss a year-long investigation examining lead poisoning in the San Francisco Bay Area from KALW News. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. You can sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. Josh Wilner is our social media producer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.